Chapter 3, Fight and Flight. My purgatory was finally over, and I could finally exist. We reached December 2013. I got absolutely no social life whatsoever, no friends to speak of. A lovely online Dutch friend would sometimes humour me with more bad memes on 9gag. Nice bloke. I felt like a ghost for years. Until then, I didn't really go out with friends or keep any friends since my teenage years, in fact. I'd not spoken to any of my former classmates in years, and, you know, that was okay, I thought. I'd been at a university called IRC this whole time, and I was about to receive my award. The computer was a wonderful crutch for someone like me. I forgot all of the stresses about the world around me. When I graduated away from regularly abusing people online, I started exploring skills instead since my mid-teens. I began my early 20s with the equivalent of a PhD in numerous disciplines related to computer science. I had no formal qualifications, but I knew what I was doing, and I just worked on whatever I wanted. I never felt the need to socialize with people outside of controlled environments like school or work, but by 2013 I'd been unemployed for years, and I just kept learning more. This after several failed business attempts as well. I knew at that point that I should probably just get a job, but a happy accident occurred with my project, LibreRoot. I'd accidentally become the leader of a major, famous project that I built from scratch. The Free Software Foundation, or FSF, is one of the biggest non-profit organizations championing free software. It was created initially in 1985 to fund the GNU project started by Richard Stallman in 1983. GNU was arguably still the largest free software project in 2013 when LibreRoot started. They noticed what I was doing thanks to a friend who contacted them who wanted to promote my work. My initial strategy, though, when I started my company was to spam a link to it in various free software chat rooms, including the FSFs. I also spammed a lot of people privately, which is what led to me making said friend who contacted the FSF, and, you know, the FSF, they wanted to see more. Yeah, professional networking. This all started from a little bedroom at my parents' house. When I signed my contracts with the FSF, I didn't even have a printer, let alone a scanner. Went into my parents' bedroom while they were sleeping, like without even asking, to print off some documents because they had a printer in there. I didn't even knock. My dad asked me why I'd woken them up, and I said, "Yeah, just go back to sleep." They were really happy the next week though, because like sales exploded in December. Like countless people started working with me on LibreRoot. Development generally surged. I'd become famous overnight with my eBay-sourced free software empire. FSF promoted my work heavily. My completely unprofessional and haphazard company was being hailed everywhere. I was completely overwhelmed for a month, and I didn't ship anything until January. And development skyrocketed, and my company was expanding rapidly by the end of 2014. Another company that had previously badmouthed me when I started, that the FSF previously focused on, they did not have a free BIOS, and they became essentially, they seemed like they were a little bit jealous at the time, and they tried to derail my efforts. I was working on a new product towards the end of 2014, and it looks like they might want to, like, you know, steal it from themselves. So I hunkered down from October to January, October 24 to January 2015, pretending that my project was dead. I just went completely silent. I just worked on it privately. This confused a lot of people, but I came back in January 2015 with a bang. And, you know, I mean, LibreRoot's for everyone. You know, it's a free software project, but I still want to protect my company, and, you know, because it's how I funded my work. I like making money. I like the prestige. This launch was big. This launch was much bigger than the last. The year 2014 had been a success, but I'd spent it mostly at my parents' house. You know, I never really went outside for the most part. I got to know people through my community, but they were just text on the screen. You know, I basically lived in the LibreRoot chat room. I was often aggressive to people. I was quite authoritarian in general, and, you know, people liked my work, and I knew how to delegate as well. You know, LibreRoot was a collaborative work. But I had to learn, you know, overnight from a young age, how to lead a major international project. And people everywhere assumed that I was some 40-year-old or something, you know. But I mean, I had a beard, so, you know, I looked a little bit older back then. But great big bushy beard. Yeah, when I first went to an FSF conference, my friends, they were so shocked that I was only 23 years old. I never went outside. You know, I just sat at my computer writing code. I would occasionally go to the shop, a shop that was about 20 meters from my home, mostly to buy cigarettes and coffee. Living with parents meant that I was still lived like a child, but, you know, I was making a six-figure salary at that point. I compared myself to workers in the shop, all on minimum wage, wondering how they could tolerate working for nothing. I made hundreds of pounds per hour back then. I didn't even like meet people. Like my family were enough. Like they clothed and fed me. I still only paid them £100 a month rent because they had no idea how much money I was actually making. I just really enjoyed being in charge of such a major project. You know, I let a lot of the power go to my head. I wasn't exactly like nasty all the time, but everyone in the project knew that I was in charge, and that made me feel really good. I didn't even spend most of the money that I made. You know, I still mostly just bought like cigarettes and coffee. I would occasionally buy gear I wanted, you know, all cheap, but I never really cared. I liked making money, but I never cared about money, you know? So that's like one of my old TV heroes said, fictional, mind you. He said, money's the house that falls apart in 10 years. And I can't respect anyone who doesn't understand this. That was Frank Underwood in the TV show House of Cards. Yeah, I suddenly found myself in Boston, Massachusetts, USA for LibraPlanet 2015. This is the FSF's annual conference. It's March 2015. I gave a talk about LibraBoot MRT in halls that the FSF had rented. The audience was so packed that people had to stand, but, you know, everyone wanted to hear me. The FSF had organised a LibraBoot installation workshop under my guidance. It was a classroom where people could come to, you know, get LibraBoot installed and learn how to do it themselves. I initially ignored the actual workshop and neglected to go even when informed. I was too busy with my friend's ThinkPad. I was actually competing with my own workshop. Yeah, I went quietly into the speaker's lounge with my friend to install LibraBoot there because I just wanted somewhere quiet, like just on his ThinkPad. Like it was just some bloke I knew online, but he shared my hotel room with me. So we obviously got, you know, like special treatment. A photographer came in at one point because there was a photographer going around like just taking pictures of the conference, like for the news. And that became the workshop, apparently. You know, me sitting in there in the speaker's lounge with all my gear. According to the latest news report, anyway, there were no actual like photos of the like workshop itself. The picture that they used in the news report for the workshop itself was me sitting in the speaker's lounge with my friend later on. Anyway, yeah, I mean, so it's several people came there to the speaker's lounge to see me instead of going to the workshop itself. One of the FSFs said, so the workshop, they had like all of the gear set up for like LibraBoot installations, you know, that I told them how to set up. But then I had my own gear that I brought from home, and I was set up in the speaker's lounge. So it was like two workshops. Yeah, anyway. One of the FSF's sysadmins started the actual workshop without me. I did actually go to pack up, though. I went to the real workshop at about 11 o'clock, like 11 in the morning, hours after it started. I apologized for being late, but, you know, I did actually find it funny. It was protocol, though. You know, you got to apologize for these things, like, They all knew I'd been next door. Like one of them even smiled and said that the FSF person who was in there even smiled and said, "No, don't worry about it. You know, we wouldn't be here for you if it weren't for you anyway." Yeah, I spent a few days the week before teaching the FSF about all the equipment they needed and how to set it all up. They studied my notes and, you know, furiously. They even reviewing private documentation that I gave them. They accurately created my setup. So, you know, come to class. Free your BIOS today. Yeah, we created about 30 new LibraBoot users in a day. The whole thing just ran like clockwork. My own project mayhem, I thought. I stayed for 1 hour. I didn't even do the work. My FSF colleague did LibraBoot installations, and I just enjoyed talking to the roughly 50 people that came to see me. Most of them weren't even like part of the class. Like they were just people coming through the room. I learned about what being God is like. Like you know, I left after about an hour, leaving my FSF colleague to run it with one of my disciples, who I trained then and there. I just knew how to use people, you know, and I wanted to enjoy the conference, you know. My entire feeling then was like one of pride, you know. I just loved all the attention, and this was by no means a small conference. Hundreds of people spoke to me. I liked all of the respect and attention that people were giving me, you know. I liked being the most important person in the room. I made friends with loads of people there, you know. The workshop was so popular that one of the FSF's own people missed his organization's presentation. Yeah, a representative from the Free Software Freedom Conservancy, then one of the FSF's biggest allies on legal issues, summoned her colleague to the stage and was aghast to find him missing from the room. "He's not here," she said. Yeah, I was in the front row of the audience and I shouted to the speaker, "Yeah, he's in the workshop." She understood immediately and announced to the crowd, enthusiastically, "Oh, he's installing LibraBoot." Yeah, several people laughed in the audience when she said that. Yeah, we went in large groups to a lot of restaurants as well. My favourite was a vegan place called Veggie Galaxy. There was also a really good Chinese restaurant next door. I cozied up to a lot of the FSF staff. I made friends with a lot of them, like a lot of the senior staff as well. My own actual Libre Boot speech was really shit because like, I'd only prepared the slides in the speaker's lounge an hour before, and I somehow accidentally deleted the entire Libre Boot website by mistake just before the talk. Like, I quickly restored a backup of bringing the website back online, and I went to a fast food restaurant where all I ordered was fries because I thought this would be quicker and my talk was in 10 minutes. One of my friends found me and he insisted that I eat a sandwich that he brought for me. And then he marched me, he just grabbed my hand and marched me to the stage. Yeah, I was really eccentric and they all loved me apparently. I was just really myself the whole time. The man who gave me the sandwich, and the man whose laptop that I'd worked on in the speaker's lounge, they both shared a room with me. So it was the three of us sharing a hotel room. He walked in on me when I'd arrived in Boston. I'd been flying for about 10 hours and I just fell asleep. I was just knackered. His first introduction to me was walking into the room and seeing me snore. So he was just sitting quietly at the desk in the room when I woke up. America felt really strange, almost fake. My only concept of it was what I'd seen in films, but the real one contained wooden houses. Many of them seemed to be falling apart. The buildings just looked really old and crummy. The infrastructure just seems old. Streets looked unmaintained and everything just generally looks cheap. A strange backwards country where all the people smiled at me. So then this is a paradise. I enjoyed my fog as I observed just how sterile everything seemed. A dead, smiling city called Boston. I left as quickly as I came, and Libre Boot was a huge success. Next logical step, join the GNU project. Sponsored by the FSF, GNU is one of the oldest and most politically important institutions in free software. With it and a few other components, you can have a full system that's all free software. It's one of the largest free software projects. It's sort of like joining the European Union at a smaller scale. You become part of a whole. The benefits for me, though, were obvious. More power inside a larger institution. GNU accession took roughly 1 year, while the project's popularity continued to expand as development skyrocketed. Again, my very own project's mayhem, I thought. Yeah, so many people joined the Libre Boot chat room and just followed my lead. I enjoyed organizing various people within the project, and we collectively churned out a lot of useful new features plus releases. Libre Boot was a resounding technical success. Libre Boot officially joined the GNU project in the year that followed. So many people joined the project to contribute code, documentation, general outreach. A lot of news websites and companies were supporting it. They all wanted to work with me, and as I led them, and I did not tell them that I lived in a tiny bedroom at my parents' house, I yawned tens of thousands of lines of code and woke up in October 2015. It celebrated the FSF's 30th year, a conference called FSF 30, and of course I attended. I did another talk. I didn't care about the money, but that was nice as well. I made a lot, but I enjoyed power, having a lot of people work with me who would help me grow. This is the nature of free software in general, that people can work independently because everyone can use the code. But my own projects used the work done by thousands of other people. Sitting in a bar with several of my FSF colleagues one night at FSF 30, and I tried alcohol for the first time at 23 years old. I genuinely believed then, since my teens, that I had no emotions, that I lived in the Matrix, or that I was a robot. This weekend was no exception, but I found that alcohol did give me feelings that I wasn't used to. I found that I had emotions, but my colleagues all still felt like robots. I always knew how to lead a room, adapting to other people like they were all me, because it felt like they were. They all sounded like me in my head. And I often couldn't hear myself. Strange, but true. This is how I felt back then. Alcohol did make me looser, but it gave me... I still had a high degree of control, to the extent that even while completely wasted, I only calmly thought, oh, so this is what being drunk feels like. Well, there was a woman there that I had a vague attraction to, who I'd spent some time with. We were friends from online. At the time, I'd fantasized about her, not even necessarily in a sexual way, but I did find her appealing. I liked her because of her intellects, as she always seems to know more than me, and she taught me a lot about technology. She herself commented once that I seemed to learn quickly. When I met her that weekend, she made coffee for me at the FSF office and took me up to the roof. It wasn't what you think. She said, "We have roof." Obviously, they play on, you know, We Have Roots. And she showed me something up there that amused me, although I don't remember now what it was. We were just messing around. I've chatted a lot with her at LibraPlanet 2015 as well, alongside another colleague, and other colleagues when we ate. I noticed her more because she was like really alive intellectually and just really outspoken, like kind of rebel sort of attitude about everything, yet also professional. She and one of her friends actually chased me as my train left on the red line, like when I was going back to the UK, like leaving for the airport, waving at me as I sped off in my carriage. My own emotion at this time was like blank, but this strange woman otherwise intrigues me. I smiled back, you know, waving, and then I just went back to the UK in peace. Back to the bar though at FSF30, we hugged goodbye as this was my last night. I also kissed her on the cheek for some reason. I don't know why, and her hair got in the way. She was with one of her friends, and you know, they both walked home. I followed them both, but I was too drunk to know which way was up. I don't even know why I followed them, but you know, my own emotional state at the time, you know, it was calm in this moment. I could have sworn that I saw them enter a building that I learned the next day was a post office or something. I'm quite sure they entered it, but I tried to enter the building myself and it was obviously, you know, locked. I don't know what I would have said or, you know, done or said. I don't think I would have, like, physically done anything. Like, I was just drunk and confused. I just walked back to the bar and just kept talking to my friends. Nothing came of it. And I did tell her online afterwards, though, like, after I got home, that I was attracted to her, to which she responded that she was gay. It's all a big misunderstanding at the time, of course, but, you know, I was living as a man then, and I didn't know I was, like, trans. So back then, I actually believed I was a heterosexual man, as I was, in fact, attracted to women. Although I wasn't actually sexually attracted to her, I just enjoyed her company. Like, I just liked her personality. You know, she was one of the most intellectually unique people that I'd ever met. It just so happens that this individual was in fact, a transgender woman. I learned this much later, and so was the girlfriend. Yeah, the lady that she was with was a girlfriend, as I discovered later. I wasn't offended by this, and you know, we just continued to be good friends. You know, her girlfriend, she was really nice. She was often like really vulgar, but she was like really warm, and she was also a bit quiet, a bit reserved, but you know, not quite as outspoken. I mean, she was also sometimes outspoken as well. But she was really intelligent and just really articulate when I knew her, and she had a bit of her own rebel streak in her as well. I found it amazing, actually, on two counts. One, that I had a gay friend, and two, because I'd never had a gay friend before, you know, and two, that she looked female, like she looked and sounded the part, which blew my mind. Before I met her, I thought all trans women looked and sounded male. Like, I had no intellectual understanding of, like, gender dysphoria or gender identity or transition or anything, yet here were these two beautiful women, you know. They'd both had extensive voice training, and they were both, like, unmistakably female. If you didn't know that they were trans, you'd assume they were born just like naturally as women, like naturally in a physical and biological sense. I enjoyed my time at FSF30. You know, I spoke to both of these women the whole time I was there. I'd always preferred female friends, like not even in a like sexual or romantic way. Like, I'd never asked a girl out when I was younger. I just felt more socially comfortable around women. Back then, I didn't even think about this like consciously, but you know, I just seemed to gravitate more reliably towards women. I just felt more comfortable around them, you know, even as a man, I felt safe around women. But yeah, so these lesbians, they'd spent the entire night with me, like while I was there, and we talked about a lot. A girlfriend smiled at one point that night when I said, "I am not my name. I am not my name." I didn't at that time even know that a transgender woman was looking at me, smiling at me. I did see some strangeness in both of them compared to other women, but I had no knowledge of what a transgender person was. So I just thought they were both naturally born women with strange bodies and faces. I didn't even flinch when one of their other female friends had a man's voice. Maybe American women just all sound male. Weird, right? That's what I thought. Anyway, you know, I was talking about myself in that moment, you know, like, you are not, I am not my name, like, in a way that I didn't even understand at that time, besides I just had a general knowledge that I was somehow strange, a general calm unease. But she apparently knew something as she herself was smiling. She didn't say anything, and I don't even remember anything else that we said. I just remember that one thing. Like, we were just chatting, chatting in general about. We were just telling each other a little bit about our lives, you know. These two women, you know, they were the ones that I noticed most strongly in the room while I was there. I met up with the girlfriend at the FSF office because she was volunteering, and so was I. You know, whenever I went to Boston back then, the first place I went was the FSF office. This lady, the one that whose hair got in the way, was working as an FSF staffer at the time. You know, we were good friends. I still think fondly of her now as I write this, you know, but, you know, we were close friends. We spoke a lot about, mostly about technical things, you know, like we also talked a little bit about our lives. She was a little bit guarded though, you know, and I was a bit foggy. I was my own foggy ball of, you know, whatever. I consciously remember being who I was back then, but I am no longer that person. You know, I've evolved a lot since then. They both just smiled at me all night, you know, I was just a really like dopey bastard, but I was the quiet, aloof little center of the room that everyone's still crowded around because apparently they enjoyed Libreville or something. But these women, you know, I did offer a lot to conversations, and, you know, most of them technical or political, but these women though, like, they talked to me like about everything else. Like, we just talked in general. I'd done a short Libreville speech that day and she watched it. You know, it was only a small conference. I don't even think I could call it a conference, to be honest. Like, but, you know, it's like one day conference. She'd been really surprised, and I actually said when I first arrived, sitting in her office, he came all the way from Great Britain just for FSF 30. When I spent time with women, you know, if they accepted me in their group, I felt like I was one of them. You know, I consciously felt this even then, despite not knowing what this meant. I just felt a general belonging, like I belonged with the group. You know, I wanted to be with them, and it was usually never in a sexual or romantic way. They just seemed more interesting and more intelligent than men. You know, most women, a lot of women went to that conference. A lot of women went to FSF conferences. I did also enjoy the company of men, but, you know, there was something strange about them, which I just couldn't put my finger on, like something strangely familiar and even pleasant. Yeah, I felt somewhat uneased. The thing is, I was still, like, mostly withdrawn to my room at this time. Like, I thought it was strange that I could just stay in my room and feel fine. I was happy with my projects and fame that I built around them. You know, I enjoyed all the attention that I had online. I did, though, start meeting with people in person during this year, most of which I'd met online. Like, most of these people I met through Libreboot. Problem is, though, like, a lot of these people, you know, they're all young and, like, stunted in their own similar ways. I did meet people, though. The bloke I'm about to describe was described next. I met several times. Yeah, while you were distracted, I walked through a strange door back to the UK. I'm now spending time with some bloke I met on a chat room in his dorm. We mostly sat in his dorm room and wrote code because he was like, you know, and talked politics because, like, he was a student at the time. We went out a lot to restaurants as well. You know, I'd pay, obviously, being the gentleman I thought I was back then. We'd let go back to his room. We sat and watched a film in his bed, Fight Club, on my laptop. It was a cramped dorm room, so we couldn't exactly use a sofa. There was no sofa. We were sitting quite close, you know, we were cozy as we watched Tyler Durden be the coolest man on earth. I remember feeling quite relaxed next to him at the time, not knowing quite why I felt so good looking at him. He was otherwise boring on a personal level. You know, he was young, about 20. He was unsure about his place in the world. He was quite sensitive. He was possessive. He was also quite shy. He was driven, enterprising, and had big dreams. But, you know, he was young. His personality seemed incomplete, and, you know, he's probably, like, no longer that person that I knew, you know, but he's definitely, I can probably say, he's probably successful now, like, given his personality back then. Nothing happens, you know, we both got bored and we just went back to sleep. We just went to sleep. I went home the next morning, like, literally just some bloke, you don't know him. I also met his mum. I wondered how the hell he could breathe in her hotel room. She filled it with her cigarette smoke. Like, all the windows were shut and it was July. She'd visited the UK to see her son, and I didn't really talk to her much. I just went to see him. I don't remember what happened. All that carbon monoxide made me pass out, probably. My whim woke me up in the Netherlands. Yes, I zip around quick. Please keep up. It's November 2015 now, and there's a lonely transgender woman who I'd spoken to recently. To a stranger, I ask, "Well, that is it?" 11 a.m. My friend was late. We did eventually meet, though, at roughly midday. She picks me up from the airport in her car. We exchanged at length about computer science, veganism, politics, and so on. We saw her normal town. I picked up fruit, and I had to bring my own bag. She was entirely pre-transition, lacking confidence, even in her own dress. She'd only recently come out of the closet. I accepted her womanhood because, you know, I had no reason to do otherwise. I'd researched her conditions, you know, before I met her, so I could understand it. she wasn't confident about transition. You know, she also had like perceived family problems, and her doctors were really slow. She'd lived the wrong life, you know, and all she wanted was hormones. I complimented her dress and makeup, encouraging her to wear it. It seemed like the right thing to do, and I was bored. I don't even think I had a reason to go there. Like, she slept in her parents' secluded loft room. A mum came in once, and I said, "Hello, ich hab dort nam." Elated to this strange English man, she responded thus, "Ah, Hutzel, you speak to Netherlands?" Smiling, half laughing, and shaking my head, I responded, "Nay." Plausible deniability. She switched politely to English. Dutch friend sighed. My Dutch friend, you know, she was the sort of person who didn't like controversy or confrontation. She was also quite bubbly around friends, you know, warm to everyone around her. She had a certain giddy giggle that I knew was a cope. She did it when she was nervous about something or, you know, just otherwise unsure. Here was me, you know, just making a complete fool of myself in front of her mum. I could have said yes, but I had superpowers. I'd spent about two years like practicing Dutch with my other Dutch friend. I never actually spoken it, you know, but they all spoke English anyway. But, you know, like, I mean, the dad, he had a really strange interpretation of English himself. Like when he described the Dutch dikes that prevented flooding, he said, "They blow the water away." My friend responded to him, politely asking that he never make another attempt at English. Believing me to be incompetent and in no way capable of comprehending their conversation, they articulated freely at length about doctors' schedules by the dinner table as I sat and drank their wine, staring meekly, and I smiled. I also petted their dog. The table had beautiful chandeliers above, next to the living room with a pirated TV box that my friend set up, on which we'd watched My Little Pony. Yes. The carpet was dark brown, the walls were all beige, and they had a weed-smoking neighbour, whose smell often seeps through the vents in this large terraced house. It's Dutch people. I liked the mum because she was like really intelligent about everything. Like, she was really stubborn. She took a lot of convincing, but she was otherwise warm and she seemed to care about her daughter. The dad was much more aloof. You know, he had his own sort of like comic personality. He'd always make a joke out of everything, but he was otherwise quiet. A brother was also at the table, but I never really spoke to him much. All I saw was his 3D capable 64-bit game, 64-bit cartridge-based gaming system made by a highly litigious company, which had a game on it with a strange red plumber man who could jump through pipes and even fly. Something to do with a princess. I mean, all the brother said to me at the time was, "Thank you for smoking outside." Not exactly much to go on. Anyway, my friend got what she wanted, you know, parental respect. I spoke to the mum earlier that day, alleviating all her fears, you know, because I'd done the research. I showed her pictures of, you know, like trans women transitioning and the results and all that. She was worried that her daughter might look ugly, that others might not accept her. My friend's therapist asked her to write a to-do list for all the things she needed, like for her transition in a journal. But my friend wasn't feeling up to it, though. Like, she couldn't even like bring herself to write. So I wrote for her as she dictated and she corrected as I went. She was too depressed to do it alone. I'd even gone with her to a therapist appointment that day. I mean, obviously waited outside in the lobby. You know, what else was I going to do? I wasn't going to sit at home and just twiddle my thumbs, right? I was in a country anyway, so there was no reason for me not to go there. Yeah, one night, she became overwhelmed to the point of tears. She asked permission to hug me and literally sit on my lap. I thought it was strange, but, you know, I saw no reason to deny a request. This is just what friends do, I thought. People hug each other. What I'd suppressed and forgotten for years and became physically apparent. Nothing happened because I was a dopey bastard and we both went back to our computers. She tested me again the next day, still nothing, before plainly asking if I would lie with her, to which I whispered softly as my mind raced. Yes. I froze as she budged across until all she uttered were the following soul-crushing words. "You're really bad at this," as she laid out her hand, smiling. I felt such heat as my mind became mush, her body hard yet warm and soft. It never occurred to me that I might initiate myself because, like, this literally was not the purpose of my visit. I genuinely was here on a whim to help her with her problems and, you know, I did not expect to become aroused. She had facial hair, wore hoodies, and had not begun transition. She looked and smelled like a man, all the more alluring, and it did not concern me. She did as she pleased with my body, quite undignified as I was quite inexperienced and wet. I woke up in bliss the next day, sun glistening through the window as I lay there with the most beautiful woman I'd ever met in my life. I didn't want to leave her bed. She was my first. This was an important self-discovery alongside one fact that I merely affirmed. My eyes turned blank as we embraced that night, including when we were, in bed. I was just aware of the room in every detail. She could not see my eyes. Her parents had sensed that something in me seemed incomplete, but they couldn't quite place me. They couldn't put their finger on it. Dutch friend had said something similar in a later encounter. Driving around in a car, she told me that I seemed empty, not necessarily depressed. She commented, for example, that I seemed to have a high level of drive, especially in how I could energetically make decisions and implement something in Libra Boot in an instant, bossing people around in the chat room. Now, she told me that I just seemed a little bit off in person, despite my otherwise seeming energy and charisma online. As alluded to in Chapter 1, Too Smart for School, I can show a dynamic range in my tone of voice and facial or bodily expressions. However, my natural instinct is to be just calm. It's not that I didn't feel anything. I just don't naturally express myself at an emotional level in most cases. I laugh at jokes, for example, and I become angry or happy. I can become happy and smile at something I did. Even there, you know, I often take personal achievements in or hardship in stride. I'm not a robot, you know, but, you know, it's my lovely inner calm. I was completely relaxed and at peace the whole time while I was there with my friends, not trying to act in front of anyone. I was just there, you know, spending time with my friend. I had no intentions one way or the other, really. You know, it's just a whim, as I said. I was just, you know, there. I don't really know how else to say it. I was in the room for seemingly no reason at all, spending time with a woman that I'd spent maybe all of 20 non-consecutive hours talking to online. She was essentially a stranger, but Ryanair flights were very cheap. This goes alongside my blankness when hugging her. It was just like, I was like that the whole time. You know, I didn't even think of it at the time. I don't consciously be neutral. I just am. It's when I'm not neutral that I'm thinking about it, because it requires conscious effort. I didn't even think about it intellectually at the time. I think intellectually now, in retrospect, analysing my time there for the purpose of prose. I digress. I bought cola and the cashier switched to English. I considered this a tragedy because I wanted to speak Dutch. I noticed how beautifully organised the streets were in the Netherlands, though I nearly got run over by a bike, though, while trying to buy a Coke. I enjoyed looking at the train stations. The overhead lines there were arranged in a way that seemed unlike the UK. Everything was much more tightly integrated in the Netherlands, as they seem to have a much higher public transport and higher quality public transport in general, much better than what I was used to at home, although my friends drove me everywhere. I enjoyed my friend and her family. You know, they were nice people. I've just felt relaxed while I was there, and I just do things with my friend. A lot of the time, you know, we just sat in the living room and watched cartoons. In fact, my entire time there was just like living at home. You know, just daily activities like eating, shopping. So I usually do this is what I usually do with friends. You know, when I visit other people in other countries, I just go to their houses and I just talk to them. We shopped regularly. You know, we mostly watched TV. I also saw her university, beautifully modern, where I pretended to be a student because I was hungry. I saw a postman deliver a mail on a bicycle, of which there were many. We also walked the family dog twice. Yeah, that's what the mum saw. The last thing I saw was a mum smiling at me as she drank her coffee. I fell down a stairwell and landed in December 2015. I'm in my bedroom at home now in the UK, burning punk CDs for my dad. Weird. Oh well, Netherlands was nice. I sighed, I chain smoked and I wrote some code. Total blur, and I'm about to have another blackout. January 2016. I'm travelling to Brussels for a conference called FOSTEM. My LibriBoot speech is in 12 hours. Time to grab my friend. My essence envelops the Netherlands and, wary now of her mother, sensed her form from which I became manifest. We pressed 130 kilometres through a Schengen wormhole to a 5-star hotel in Brussels and dined. FOSTEM paid the damages. Satisfied, we quite simply walked to a bar, entry into which required answering the following question. Who is Richard Stallman? A spirited discussion with an OpenBSD developer asked me how many fingers. OpenBSD developer smiled, menacing. A strange autistic man's room with Dutch friend. Shit-faced. I could not find the exit. We laughed. I was having fun. I passed out and woke up on stage. I gave an impassioned, albeit hungover, LibriBoot speech. Whisked away instantly to another bar, where once again we discussed, among other things, quantum. A lovely waitress stepped aside to enjoy a cigarette. I very much enjoyed it myself, feeling as though we were but one body. I watched with glee as I sipped my beer. I was really sad when she put it out. I blinked and I found myself on the stage in Denmark before falling sideways at warp speed through Copenhagen Airport. All I saw was a woman wearing the most beautiful blue dress I'd ever seen, and I wondered just how soft that dress was. I felt her as she moved, a surreal pleasure as I landed softly into my March 2016 office chair in the United Kingdom. My Danish friend was also nice. I looked ugly in my Danish talk, sweaty and ugly, disgusting face, crooked, eerie. Ugh. I decided to just relax for the day. We don't need portals in the UK, you know, I mean, the bus service is already decent enough. All that travel was quite dizzying anyway. I was completely relaxed that day, and all I could think about was the Netherlands. I was removing hairs suddenly from my face in a photo editor, and I smiled ecstatically at a video of a Canadian lady named Tiffany inserting a dilator into her new vagina. And my mind violently snapped. What the fuck am I doing? I thought. She looked so happy, and my mind was sipping beers. This time, I'd had one too many. Error. My words to my Dutch lady, now thousands of miles away, were immediate. I've been lying to you, and myself, for years. A 5-minute pause followed, then. I'm a woman.